Hello, everyone. Welcome back to E-commerce AI, the Revenue Revolution. Today, we're joined by Ramiro Velasco, an engineer, entrepreneur, and co-founder of GoAvance. With a deep expertise in Amazon growth and Latin American e-commerce, Ramiro has driven success for over 50 plus seven-figure brands and navigated challenges faced by foreign brands entering new markets. Today, Ramiro joins our CEO, Dr. Ari Khan, to discuss all things strategies, partnerships, future e-commerce trends, and so much more. So without waiting any longer, I'm going to let you guys take it away.
Thank you, Kristen. Ramiro, great to see you again.
Ari, thank you so much for having me. And Kristen, you made me sound so smart. Oh, my God. it's so funny, you know, when you have done those things, but you're like, I'm not that clever, guys.
Well, you know, I have a little bit of a history in, I guess I'd call it Latin America, Central America. I spent 10 years in Belize doing real estate development. It's been on my mind a little bit. And when I look at everything that's happening, and I was even watching a YouTube video this morning about manufacturing in Mexico, is just such a huge opportunity, giant economies, political motivations. We now have new legislation for cleaner borders. The opportunity south of the border is huge. And today we're going to learn a little bit more about it, but also with respect to marketing south of the border and the languages and the opportunities for artificial intelligence to recognize trends and to help companies find the products that they want to buy. I think that there's going to be major opportunities created over the next couple of years. So Ramiro, maybe we can start off. Tell us a little bit about GoAvance and some of the opportunities that you see in the nearest term.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never thought about it from this angle, so I'm going to start off a little bit differently. I was lucky enough to live all over the world. I lived in 10 countries before moving back to Mexico, and what that led to is me having a lot of business ideas that aren't because I'm smart. It's because I saw them somewhere else, right? So like, I got back to Mexico, and I was like, guys, we should do motorcycle taxis like in Jakarta. Like, they get through traffic. Like, it's incredible. Obviously, I didn't carry that out, but, you know, like, just seeing these areas of opportunity. I believe this entire sort of business of being in Mexico really comes from, guys, America did, you know, we saw the path that the American e-commerce followed. We can follow that. So, you know, being exposed to other cultures and the way other businesses are doing things is such a leg up. So in Mexico, what happened was I was working for an agency. And clients kept going like, hey, can we sell in Mexico? And we said, yeah, absolutely. And then you'd go in to make a shipment and you went, oh, never mind. Sorry about that. Wasted a week trying to make it work. Then you do enough digging and you realize, oh, it's just a ton of, you know, hoops to jump through and barriers of entry and risk involved and all this stuff. And the just lack of transparency on how to do anything here that made us realize there is a business opportunity here to open up the Mexican the Mexican e-commerce landscape by helping brands that would like to get in, that would actually be great market fits, actually get in, right? On top of that, like our middle class, like in Mexico, the middle class is strengthening. For a good while, the peso was strengthening as a currency. Right now, with the instability, maybe it's a little bit, you know, up in the air, but for a long time, like, we've seen strength in the country. And then you bring up
trade. I think that the macroeconomics for Mexico are amazing. I mean, you've got sustained growth of GDP at almost 4% a year ever since COVID. It's outperforming other countries. And those systemic problems, the challenges of just basic logistics and so forth, if you understand the country, all of a sudden you can be the one that breaks through that and leverages all of those macroeconomics. But you need a partner that actually is local and knows what they're doing. Otherwise, you end up just being another person lost in Mexico City that doesn't know where they left their wallet.
I literally talked to someone that I was like, hey, how much are you paying? Like, they sell a $10 product. And they said, I'm paying $2.70 per unit to ship it to the country. And I went, you're getting scammed. Straight up scammed. They're like, well, I'm paying duties on the way in. And I'm like, can you deduct these duties from your final, you know, profit? And they went, no, because I don't have a tax ID. And I was like, you're getting scammed. They're not paying $270 per unit. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Having someone, like, boots on the ground is ultimately the benchmark that you should go for. Like, someone that understands something about the space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
So when you're marketing products into Mexico online, what are the major platforms? What do you do?
Okay, so oh my God, I love this. We started out not doing influencers, and we're like, you know, we know Amazon, we know Mercado Libre, we can come in, do PPC, do images, and climb up the ranks. Yeah, sure, you got it, but when some of these brands have more ambitious goals, you have to understand the country, understand the local shopping habits. Listen, I'm not going on Amazon yet as your average Mexican citizen to find the solution to the problem I'm having on Amazon, right? So how do I reach you to make you know that this exists? So a lot of the way the Mexican landscape is working is I have to find you where you're spending your time, which is Facebook, it's Instagram, it's TikTok, right? To get you to shop e-commerce. And I think, I mean, it's something that even happened internally when my partners on this business are American. And they go, why can't we just do PPC? And it's like, listen, because you have different shopping habits. That's not how it's going to work, right? Like, even, you know, and they live here. So
that's such a common thing. People assume that other people are like them. But when you're looking globally, the world's a big place, and people are really different. They have different habits, right?
Absolutely. I am, again, like this whole idea that I could travel all over the place. Well, I didn't travel. I got taken because it was, you know, my parents' job. I wasn't a tourist. I just kind of lived there. I didn't. They're like, oh, do you speak language? I don't. I just sort of sat in whatever house I had to live in, right? But I think you realize that in some aspects, every single person is kind of the same. And then in other aspects, our actions are consistently different because of the way, like, the resources we had available, be it temperature, be it ground fertility, like soil fertility, right? Like, be it whatever part you were in the world, you grew up a little bit differently. And it's like understanding those differences is so interesting. To me, for example, I'm looking at Mexico. One stat that I love to bring up is since 2019, credit card adoption is up 225%. That's
wow.
Crazy. That's a huge number.
That is massive.
And what does that tell you? Okay, one, economy is booming. Cool, because like people are willing to spend. Two, economy is moving away from being cash-based. And three,
yes.
Some new banks that are like, listen, we need you guys to get credit cards, are seeing the potential in the macroeconomic, you know, sort of landscape in Mexico. That they're going, we have banks popping up from all over the world now coming in and being like, you guys don't have credit cards. Please let me give you a credit card. Right?
That is so, huge.
Yeah, and that translates to, okay, I now have a credit card. Let me go on Amazon.com. Let me go on your Shopify. Because before I would see it and have to ask someone that did have a credit card to buy it for me. So
it also perhaps suggests what the best first products are to come in, right? All right. People are going to have their first credit card. It's probably got a $500 limit. Don't sell something that costs $600.
Awesome. Oh, that's an incredible point. Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I was gonna make a joke and be like, card holders. slim wallets. That's the goal.
yeah, that's right.
but, you know, like, I look at the country and I'm going, man, like, there's no way that the next 10 years just go crazy. I think 2022... or 2021, Mexico overtook China as the U.S.'s number one trading partner. Retook it after, you know, an infinitely long time.
And that's going to accelerate with the politics right now.
Absolutely.
Everyone is going nearshoring. This offshoring stuff's too risky. Political risk, travel risk, COVID risk, all sorts of stuff. It all blew up. We should have been doing it right
locally,
here,
like literally.
North America anyways.
I have some friends that their business is finding sourcing in Mexico. Now, it's hard. Something I'll say is doing business in Mexico is hard. A lot of, not everything's online, and I would wager less than like a third of potential like manufacturers or whatever are online. So right now there's a huge booming business in, hey, I make hats. Can you find me a hat manufacturer? And hat manufacturers are going to like be kind of difficult to work with. They'll send you product, like a sample, and then they go, well, we ran out of that fabric, so we sent you a different one. And it's like, this is a 10,000 unit batch. Like, excuse me, I can't So
yeah, you can't just make it up on the fly.
Exactly. So that in that intermediary spot of having a sourcing sort of agent or agency that also will stay on top of the manufacturers, I think is such an opportunity spot that obviously we didn't go into. We went into the importing route, but like you're seeing these markets pop up and just be so interesting.
So on the importing route, that's a great point. On the importing route, do you go with intermediate warehouses in the U.S. and Mexico? How do the logistics, what are best practices or common practices?
I'm a huge believer in let people that are good at what they do do what they do. And don't. I can't learn warehousing overnight, right? Like, that would be insane. So we work with warehouse partners in the U.S. and in Mexico. And, you know, they're like, oh, but you can make more money if you had your own warehouse. Yeah, I could also mess up a lot more. So we're lucky to have found partners that we really trust. And specifically, I think in Mexican culture, you don't want someone that's going to tell you, yes or no, sir, here's a really nice document, sir. You want someone that you can call and be like, hey, dude, what's up? Where's the stuff? Like, just, you know, have a casual. And again, that's something that when you're doing like business in the US, it feels a little bit different, where it's like, you know, we're a little more formal. I'm like, no, the person I trust the most here is someone that I can swear at, and not in a rude way, in a familiar
casual,
way.
Casual, friendly.
Yeah.
Way, right?
So, you know, I'm doing business and then my partners are like, that guy seems like untrustworthy because he doesn't seem too formal. I'm like, that's exactly who we want.
Interesting. Wow, and it would be the opposite. Yeah. If you'd only done business in America, you're like, ah, this guy's too loosey-goosey for me. I can't trust him. As opposed to Mexico, this guy's too buttoned down. Don't trust
this guy's too
him,
buttoned right? down. You know what that means? Took orders his whole life, doesn't really know what he's doing. Ah. It's not, yeah. I mean, business in Mexico is tough, and it's mostly the cultural differences. I sometimes feel like I'm acting as a translator between American business and Mexican business, where they tell me, okay, I'll have it to you by Thursday. And I turn to the American person and I go, all right, we'll have it on Monday, like next Monday.
That's right.
You know? But it's not to disparage my country. I think it's just cultural differences and like people pleasing and so on. But it's tough for an outsider to do it.
Now, a lot of people do drop shipping. Is that a common way to get started in Mexico, or do you do more bulk transfers?
Us personally, but like GoVans, we're starting a dropshipping program. The reason for that is it's less committal. We're already non-committal at all, but this is even less, right? Mm. We don't believe at all in dropshipping. Why are you launching it then? Because it's a really good test. What we're finding is like, listen, if you're getting 2 purchases a month drop shipping, we can make that 200 if you're in country, right? Like, it's like, okay, like, I just don't want you to send me anything that had 0 purchases. Like,
right.
So it's like that sort of, if you want to take longer and just be like, all right, let's test it. Let's see how we do before we send over. Okay, we'll see. But yeah, in general, drop shipping to me is, we know this as consumers. Hey, you can get it in 10 days. Oh, I'll just... we'll find a shop that sells it in person, like
right, yeah.
Very competitor.
Well, right off, especially in the Amazon work mindset, where it's like, no, tomorrow, you know.
Yeah, literally, like the one right next to yours said delivers tomorrow. I clicked that one, obviously.
Yeah.
I was once buying a like, and this is why I know from personal experience. I was once trying to buy a keyboard for like a music keyboard. And I could, every delivery was in 4 days because it's a big bulky item. 4 days, I couldn't wait that. Not because it was urgent, but because I don't like waiting. So I called shops in my city and just went, hey, do you have this? Hey, do you have this? I'll come by. It took me like 4 hours because of the traffic and whatever. But I preferred that than to wait 4 days, right? So we know this as shoppers. Why would you assume your consumers are any different to you in that regard, you know?
Do when you're working with somebody and bringing them into Mexico, are they often selling in shops? Are they like putting products in shops, or is it all online?
So us, we don't have that functionality yet. We're in the process of it. We're closing some really interesting deals with the department stores, whatever. In general, if you have a retail presence and not an online presence, that's a really good fit for us. And if you would like to build a retail presence, what you really mostly want is to start out with e-commerce sales and be able to show that there's demand for your product. It's really hard, right. To cross border and go, hey, I sell a lot of this in the U.S. And they go, and? So, you know, I think in both cases, it ends up being, I mean, e-commerce, we keep thinking, even now, by the way, it's been established that e-commerce is the way we shop. Even now, companies are consistently undervaluing e-commerce and under, like, you know, not attributing enough resources to e-commerce growth. And like, this is kind of the thing that we put up. And you're like, what are you doing? Like, this could be, this should be 50% of your revenue. What are we playing at? In Mexico, that's even a little bit worse. So what that's letting us do is come in and just be like, oh, that guy doesn't have optimized images. We do. And be, okay, I'll click that one. Right? It's a little bit, I don't know. Like, you and I were e-commerce people. We sort of think about it like it's a no-brainer. It's a little bit hard to think about, like, put yourself in the other shoes and be like, I'll let that simmer.
Right. So, all right. So let's see. So I've got a product. I've done a couple of tests and maybe I use drop shipping to make it work. And now I've got an online product. It's got some demand in Mexico and I want to go forward. First of all, is Mexico one market or do I do different things in different markets? And, you know, how do you
it's one market. So we have multiple marketplaces. So we have Amazon, Mercado Libre, Coppel, Walmart, Liverpool. But we, as a market, we have to consider it one. What we do think about a lot is, all right, who's buying the product? How are we catering to them? But that's because it's, you know, like a demographics thing, not so much a geographic thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I spoke to someone that did ceiling fan filters. And I thought every single home in the South has ceiling fans. This is a great fit, right? Because always, like, you have literally millions of ceiling fans and dirty air. Like, why wouldn't you put it, you know? So that's what, like, that's kind of what we think about. I spend a lot of time traveling the country, not because I'm a huge travel head, but because it just happens. My partner, she likes to travel a lot and I just kind of have to follow. And again, this traveling opens your eyes and go, oh, people here need this. I live in a city. I wouldn't have thought this would have ever sold. Mm-hmm. Cool. Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. No, if you're not on the ground, you don't have the intuition in your belly for what people really, and that goes back to, like, you can't just expect anyone who doesn't have any real presence in Mexico to help you navigate the cultural nuances that make the difference between success and failure and entering a new market.
Literally, it's like, I think no one likes being sold to. Everyone kind of likes being catered to. Right? So having just like, hey, this product actually speaks to me. Cool. That's fantastic. That's your number one selling point.
So when someone is working with GoAvance, how does it start? Like, how does somebody, you know, determine, you know?
Generally how they start is, hey, I tried to do this myself and it was impossible. And it's like, okay, cool. Come on in. We have a philosophy that is, it's an unproven market in both size and market acceptance for any given product. We have a philosophy that is, I have to lower the barriers to entry as much as possible because our whole goal is to optimize the risk reward. Risk, because risk is, sure, it's inventory, and sure, it's like any money that I have to spend on compliance or whatever, but it's also opportunity cost. How long did I have to spend on this? How many people did I have to put on these reports and these conversations and these blah, blah, blah? That all adds up because so often the conversation is, oh, I have no time. Like, we wanted to do Mexico, but we just literally don't have time. And that's where being able to say, oh, we handle everything. Like, ask your warehouse to send products to here within the U.S. Like, even our own invoicing, we'll do the invoices and be like, hey, can you invoice us for this? Like, here's the invoice. Can you send it over? What do they have to do? Really send product, read through a contract, and then that's it. We take care of, all right, we received it in the U.S., we crossed it over to Mexico, we delivered it in Mexico City, we did inventory management and optimizing the listings and all the things that happened. We ran the PPC and blah, blah, blah. And it's really nice to just get a report that says, hey, you sold this. I go, oh, neat.
Right. Yeah, cool. Exactly. Wow. Okay. Well, so how do people find you to get started in Mexico?
I will say one thing. If you just have questions, talk to me on LinkedIn. If you just, hey, like I had this idea, send me a message on LinkedIn. I'm super happy to help. If you want to schedule like an actual, hey, I'm interested in this, goavance.com, G-O-A-V-A-N-C-E. That's my calendar up there in the contact us form. Talk about hubris. and then again, we can chat. Like ultimately, I don't believe in sort of throwing anyone to the wolves and just be like, yeah, like just try it. It's like, let's talk. Like, will this product work? I keep turning away people going like, dude, I don't think Mexicans will buy your product. Like, I'm sorry. You know? So I think that's the very first thing to do. And then we take it from there.
Awesome, guys. This was another great episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we will see you all next time. Thank you.